quorum yet, but we thought we'd take her presentation and then we can maybe act on the bill when she gets back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm here with Senate File 3199, and I believe that this is an issue that we are all quite familiar with. But just by way of background, this concerns the Volunteer Healthcare Provider Program, which was established in 2003 to be administered by the Administrative Services Unit. And the bill was created with bipartisan support from both bodies to purchase medical professional liability insurance for retired doctors, nurses, and dentists serving low-income patients in nonprofit health clinics. The program has been highly successful, and originally had a budget of $50,000. And the program's appropriation was available until it was expended. The Administrative Services Unit was then required to apportion between the licensing boards an amount to be raised through fees by the respective boards to cover the cost of providing that coverage. The fees are deposited into the state government special revenue fund, but the Administrative Services Unit does not have the authority to spend the funds on the program for lack of appropriate appropriation language. That has not proved to be a problem until earlier this summer, or last summer, when all of those various clinics and entities were notified that their medical malpractice liability insurance would be expiring and ending. And at this time, I think it's appropriate to recognize and thank the members of the Legislative Advisory Committee who were instrumental in seeing that the necessary appropriation was made so that this program could be continued. And it was through the cooperation of Representatives Clark and Liebling that we were able to work with the LAC to rectify that situation. So while the situation had a temporary fix, I thought that it would be important to amend the statutory language so that we would never be in this situation again. And so this is a rather technical fix in nature so that it's clear that the appropriation is there and can be appropriated.
Any questions? Did you have anyone to testify? Or?
Madam Chair, I do not have any testifiers, but I can tell you that this will make a lot of people in communities all across Minnesota, will allow them to continue the good service that they do.
Okay. Well, we'll just set this bill aside then until we get a few more members later in our meeting. Thank you, Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, members.
The next bill we have on the agenda is Senator Sharon. It's Senate File 2631 related to the Open Door Health Center in her district.
Good morning, Chairman Berglund. Thank you very much for this hearing on Senate File 2631, which is a bill that is asking for an appropriation for the Open Door Health Care Center in southern Minnesota. This appropriation, $350,000 appropriation for Open Door Health Care Center, is intended to be one-time money, hopefully, for bridging a problem that the agency is having while it's waiting and applying for federal funds. Open Door has applied for federal funds. This will be the fourth application cycle that they're in. However, it's a competitive program and doesn't necessarily reward Minnesota's low rate of uninsurance and our demographics adequately. The bridge funds that are being requested will keep Open Door viable. It's the only provider in a nine-county region that provides health care services to the uninsured residents in our area, and it's done through a sliding fee scale. It supports salaries of physicians, mid-level practitioners, licensed practical nurses, and community health workers. It has ongoing services for about 1,700 patients, and they have 3,500 total active patients. We certainly hope that we're able, in the midst of all of the competition for dollars, that the urgency and the need of this center is understood and that we do everything we can to find resources to help them keep their door open. And with that, I'd like to just briefly introduce to you Annette Macbeth, who can speak briefly to the subject, and then we will hear from one of our consumers and board members, public board members, and then stand for your questions.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. I've worked with the Open Door Health Center since 1994, and it started with a survey in the community that said we had people that were being refused care. And we've been on this journey, and our hope is to become a federally qualified health center New Start clinic, and we're the only one in southern Minnesota. We're currently a lookalike. I think the stories that you want to hear come from the consumers themselves. And Cecile Gassis is an immigrant to the United States from Sudan. She's been uninsured until about a year ago, but currently does not have dental insurance. And if it hadn't been for Open Door, the care that she needed in this interim period, she applied for Medicaid, was turned down, and she applied for Minnesota Care and was turned down. She works for the YWCA as a director of walking in two worlds, helping refugees and immigrants to integrate into their new country. And unfortunately, she made $10 an hour and didn't qualify for any of the programs. So I'll let her tell her story. In essence, had she not had Open Door, she probably would have had to fly back to Sudan to get the care that she needed, particularly as far as dental care is concerned.
And I assume that you are Ms. Macbeth?
Yes.
Could you just introduce yourself on the tape for the record?
Okay. I'm Annette Macbeth. I am the past chair of the Open Door Health Center and have been working with the Open Door Health Center since its inception in 1994.
And we thank you for your work.
And this is Cecile Gassis.
Ms. Gassis, do you want to introduce yourself and then give us your testimony?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. My name is Cecile Gassis. I'm originally from Sudan. And I work as the project coordinator for Walking Into Worlds. It's a program at the YWCA of Mankato. I work with immigrants and refugees like myself. And my experience with Open Door Clinic is that when I first moved to Mankato from Chicago, I worked part-time at that position, so I didn't have any insurance. And unfortunately, I had 9 cavities, so I needed some dental work on my teeth. And I didn't know where to go. And then I asked around, and I heard about Open Door Clinic. And I went there, and I said, I get paid $10 an hour, and I don't have dental insurance. And I need some help because I'm in a lot of pain. How can you help me? And they said, okay, we'll fix your teeth, and we'll see how much you can pay us a month, you know, to pay off your bills. And I had a wonderful experience. They were so understanding, and I said, if you really cannot work around my budget and my capability, I'm going to need to either fly to Chicago and see if my brother, who lived here longer than I am, can find somebody who can do that for less money, or I'll just, whatever money I have with some help, I'll just fly home and, you know, have my parents help me and get my teeth fixed. My second experience with Open Door Clinic was not too long ago when I had 4 impacted wisdom teeth, and they told me that a surgery like that can cost around $2,000, and I don't think I can afford it either. And I said, Well, I don't have dental insurance. They say, well, apply for,
Minnesota Care.
Minnesota Care. And unfortunately, I'm right in that middle where I don't make enough money to get dental insurance, and I'm not that poor to get the medical assistant or the dental assistant. So I got turned down for that and applied for Minnesota Care, and I also fell in that middle category that does not qualify. They're either making too much money or you know, they're not poor enough to be in that insurance. So I went back to Open Door Clinic. I said, well, I still don't have money, and I still have problem with my teeth. How can you help me again? And they said, okay, we'll try to. They were not able to do the surgery, but at least they were able to have the time and take really the effort to kind of ask around and see who else can help me and do the surgery for me, and at the same time be able to do payments on it. So that's my experience with Open Door. Thank you.
Are there questions for either of these witnesses?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. And perhaps Senator Sharon can tell me if the clinic keeps records of how far the outreach is, how many counties, and where all the patients are coming from.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rosen, there's some materials for you in your packet on this, but I'll pull it from my memory, although I'll ask Annette Macbeth to confirm this. It serves a 9-county area, and that 91% of the patients who are seen in this clinic come from that geographic area. So it's 9 counties. They're listed in your materials, and about 91% come from within that district. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually, we receive patients that come from as far as northern Iowa and southwestern Minnesota and southeastern Minnesota. So basically the whole southern half, but the most concentration is that 9-county area. And 80% are uninsured.
And so we don't want you to give up. We think next year you would be eligible for Minnesota Care because we raised the eligibility this biennium, and we're raising it again the next biennium. And if our health care reform bill that we're working on goes through this year, then we will be raising it again in 2011. So don't give up. We're sorry we make this so hard, but it's been just as hard for us to get the increases.
And I think the important thing here is she was in an emergency situation, and we did all the application and that type of thing, but she still needed to have the care, and we just went ahead and borrowed the money to get it
done.
Right,
and we're glad you're there. Yeah. So, but we don't want people to give up on Minnesota Care just because they apply and they're not eligible at a certain point in time, because we are continuing to raise the eligibility.
And we applaud you for that.
Thank you, Chair. I know that your time is brief. I just want to talk about the minor amount of money. I can't believe I'm saying that. Last year, I thought $350,000 was an impossible number, but
it's more impossible
each year. But in relationship to what cost savings will occur if this had gone to an emergency room, so I mean, we have to think about this in relationship to the overall costs that will be expended if we don't make these kinds of investments. And I also want to applaud Cecile Gassiz, because she's become involved in the Open Door Clinic, and she's now volunteering and is giving excellent kind of consultation to the Open Door Board as a new member of the board.
I also forgot to mention that I'm a CHW. I'm a community health worker. So
good for you.
Thank you. I work as a liaison between Open Door Clinic, all the health services providers, and the population that I serve, immigrants and refugees like myself. So sometimes we get like homeless families from, you know, different areas in Minnesota, and they come and they just show up in the office and they say, okay, well, we need help. And 99% of the times, you know, they have little infants or little kids that have like ear infection, and they say, we need to go to the emergency room or we need to go somewhere. And first question, do you have insurance? And they say, no, We just have our luggage here or whatever we were able to pack. So the only place that we can really take them to and would be able to see them, you know, in a matter of minutes or hours would be Open Door Clinic.
Senator Sharon, I guess one of the questions I have is how certain are you about receiving the federal designation in the future that would give you a more permanent footing of financing for the clinic?
I will defer that question, if you don't mind, Chair Berglund, to the person who's been working on this for a very long time. But I want to be forthright that when we started this process at the beginning of the session, we were looking at this as bridging money. I know that this is the fourth application and that the probability is very high if all of the things remain the same for us not being back here next year. But things are changing at the federal level as well. So I'm going to defer the answer to Annette Macbeth to that answer to that question.
We've been working very closely with Senator Amy Klobuchar and Senator Coleman, as well as with the Minnesota Community Health Centers Association. And they have identified us as a priority because of we're the only one in the southern half of the state. And we also are a federally qualified health center lookalike, which oftentimes is seen as a screening for the next step. We've been on this journey. First, we had to get a medically underserved designation from the state, and we've done that. And so we're doing all the steps. We're a high priority. And Jonathan Watson is here, has worked very closely with us, and he can maybe speak to some of the background of how we got to where we are today. But it's been a true partnership. Thankfully, we've had a national consultant who helped us with the writing to make it perfect in this application, and we were able to seek funding through Minnesota State Health, Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers in that process. We don't give up easily.
The other question that I have is we do make an appropriation available to the Department of Health to fund community clinics, and I wondered if you're receiving any of that money.
Yes, we are.
How much?
I don't know. I'd have to. Kristen, do you know? Sorry about that. About $150,000, I think.
Madam Chair, Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. We administer the federally qualified health center subsidy. As one of the smaller health centers in the state, although you've heard about the urgent needs that they serve, they get $30,000 from that pool.
That's right.
Okay. Maybe you can wait around and we can ask you some more questions about that after we hear from the next witness.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name again is Jonathan Watson with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. I think Annette did capture pretty much everything on the federal side. The one piece is it is contingent upon the appropriations process. In the last fiscal year, we requested through a national association about a $240 million increase to the program. Unfortunately, as the budget situation unfolded in Washington, it was whittled down to $77 million. And that makes it even a more competitive program. And Minnesota is penalized, essentially, through our demographics and our high rate of insurance. So over the last 6 years, when the president has doubled the size of this program, Minnesota hasn't done very well in terms of getting new access points and grants. Having said that, however, Open Doors scores has continually climbed every single successive application process. So we hope next year we're asking for about a $250 million increase, and depending on who our next president is, we hope for some success. That's all I have. Thank you.
Are there questions? If not, maybe Mr. Schoenbaum could come back up to the table for a minute. Thank you, Mr. Schoenbaum. I just wondered if you could give us a little background on how what the formula or how the department makes a decision about how to allocate the dollars that we've given you already. for the community clinics?
Certainly, Madam Chair. And I may need to pull up something with the details. We actually have a technical bill on the agenda on this subject in Senator Marty's committee tomorrow, so my pile for that is back at the office. But last year you appropriated $1.5 million.
And that's on top of some money you have in the base.
We also have, there are two pots at this point. There is the subsidy formula for federally qualified health centers at $1.5 million. There is also a competitive grant program for a broader range of community clinics, which is about, I think, $537,000, $27,000. To speak to the federally qualified health center subsidy program first, the legislation that you enacted provides that those funds are divided according to the amount of discounted care that federally qualified health centers provide and document on their reports to their federal funder. And there is a minimum range of $30,000, and Open Door is at that end. There is a maximum of $450,000. And the largest health center in the state, Westside Community Health Services, out of St. Paul, is at that end. And the 17 federally qualified health centers in the state kind of are get funds along that spectrum from the minimum to the maximum.
So the way you figure out is to look at how much uncompensated care they have provided?
Correct.
And so the more people they serve, the larger amount of uncompensated care they would have, then the larger amount they'd be eligible to receive?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. And do you ever look at need in terms of, you know, whether a clinic would be financially distressed to the point of closing? I know we have had some community clinics that have closed.
Madam Chair, that is correct, and the uninsured population that those clinics are serving is on the increase, as you know. The federally qualified health center subsidy program is strictly designed to be a formula subsidy division, as I've described. The smaller competitive grant program, which makes about a dozen grants a year, receives many applications, receives about 30 applications. The maximum award that we have had to set in that program is $45,000. Under that competition and the criteria and the review of applications, we do look very closely at the relative financial need and financial pressures on those grant applicants to decide how to award those funds.
Are there other questions?
Madam Chair, I would just like to say that in relationship to that at Open Door, they're at capacity. They're not able to serve more. It doesn't mean that the need is not there. So this formula, which is based on uncompensated care, would not accurately reflect the need and the capacity. Had if they had more service, they would show more uncompensated care. But they're at capacity and cannot move beyond that.
That's what's at the heart of this bridge funding, is to be able to add capacity.
So you would add capacity with the $350,000, or the $350,000 would keep you going until you can get the federal money?
Our goal would be to add capacity and keep going. And you see that from the clinical providers that we're requesting through this bridge funding. The need is there. We have to find ways to be able to serve the people that need the care.
And Senator Sharon, so what is the minimum bridge gap money you would need to keep the clinic open.
Would you allow me one moment, please? They believe that in order to just keep the doors open and not talk about expansion of service, that they would need around 250.
Okay. Senator Lori?
I had a question about the time schedule for the calculation of the formula-driven subsidy program, because also the trends that we saw in the uninsured, whereas statewide we stayed relatively stable in greater Minnesota and in south central Minnesota in particular, we did see a significant rise in the uninsured between 2004 and 2007, and really a little bit, my recollection is that we saw a little decrease in the metro areas. And so if the formula is relatively current, you might see it generate a little bit more money than if it were a couple of years lag in the formula. So I'm just wondering.
I don't think it has to do with, I don't think it's the way you're describing it, Senator Lori. The way you're describing it is what is the need. The way they are looking at it is how many people have you served that are uninsured.
But I would think that the serving of the uninsured would follow the need. I mean, I'm just...
Well, except that if you don't have capacity...
You need a certain number of resources.
Yes, but I mean...
For instance, I have a community clinic in my district, but it serves people from greater Minnesota. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. people come when they need care and they don't know where else to go, and if they can get an appointment at that clinic, then they'll go. And that is one of the few clinics that also has a dental office. So, okay. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just going to comment on the same in our area. And in northeastern Minnesota, the uninsured rate is higher than the rest of the state. It's over 10%. And I know we have a dental facility at our community health center, too. But I know they're at capacity, too. And I know that the funding the need is so urgent, and I've had them in my office recently also. And they're grateful for the funding that we've been able to give them in the last year and are just begging not to be cut, but need additional funds as well. So I know that the need is great all over Minnesota.
Are there other questions? If not, we thank you. We're just going to set this bill aside. Obviously, we're trying to figure out what monies might be available or might not be available. But we're glad we were able to hear from your witnesses and to understand the need you have.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen?
I just find it interesting that we get penalized on the federal end for having a high level of insured in the state. And at some point...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because we do more than other states to make mm-hmm. it possible that we have a lower number of uninsured. Mm-hmm. And, I don't understand why... That is, but you know, my philosophy of life is you don't wait for the federal government to take care of you. Because if you do, you'll be dead before it happens. So, Senator Rosen, we're just going to keep working on our bill and hopefully pass it and get the money to take care of the uninsured and not worry about whether a little clinic in southern Minnesota gets federally qualified or not. All right, well, we'll come back to Senator Lynch's bill. We now have a quorum, but we don't have Senator Lynch, and it is the one bill we could act on, so folks, don't go away. But in the meantime, we're going to hear from the department about the Health Match program. We have Christine Bronson and Brian Osberg with us today.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for scheduling time today for us to update you on the recent change to the Health Match project that we notified you of on Tuesday. As you are aware, Health Match is both an automated Medicaid eligibility system and an effort to streamline the eligibility determination process that is performed by DHS and county staff when making eligibility determinations for our Minnesota health care programs. You also know that through county and state data, as well as last year's legislative auditor's report regarding Medicaid eligibility, that the state's need for automation is great. The very complex eligibility rules outlined in statute and frequently changed result in 16,000 decisions that must be asked and answered for each application. Automation is critical if we are to improve and manage that complexity, simplify the application process, improve accuracy and program integrity, as well as deliver faster results to clients. The need for Health Match has not diminished. In fact, it has only grown in the last 5 years. The development of Health Match began in 2003 when DHS contracted with a small vendor called SSI. Since that time, the vendor has gone through two ownership changes, and we have resized the project twice, once in 2004 and once in 2005. As you see in the spreadsheet before you, the total cost of the contract with the vendor was $22 million, and during the last five-year project history time frame, we have paid the vendor $8.3 million. These payments were for documentation of business requirements, system design, partial construction of the Health Match system, and a license to the underlying software framework. Unfortunately, after several difficult years, we have decided to terminate the most recent agreement with our vendor ACS that assumed the contract last year. We did this after a structured decision-making process in which we considered the detailed aspects of product quality, the vendor's development processes, and the vendor's demonstration of project management. The decision on all points was to discontinue use of the vendor. You know that this project has had, as many IT projects do, delays and difficult periods. DHS's position to date has been to try to work through those and maintain a relationship with all three vendors so as to salvage the product and not suffer more severe setbacks. This decision-making process signaled the end of that position, however. We are confident, though disappointed, that this is the right decision to make. The effect of this change is dramatic in achieving the end goal of an automated eligibility system. We will undertake a review during the next 30 days to determine the most effective way of completing the Health Match project. We will make an assessment of the current technical framework, our staffing capacity, the skill sets required for various options, and the likely fiscal implications. We expect that our developers and business staff will continue to work on the existing product during this time to ensure no unnecessary loss in productivity. We also have not stopped making improvements to the eligibility determination processes that we currently have. The OLA will detail some of those efforts in their upcoming communications with you. And finally, as we are doing today, we will keep you informed of our progress and work. We are concerned and disappointed about this development, as well as the difficulties involved in building and implementing a system of this complexity. However, we are determined to do the right thing. I know you share the frustration of not having a fully automated solution, but this is an effort no state has yet mastered. In Minnesota, we are committed to doing this right and doing this well. And with that, I will take any questions you have.
I have quite a few questions, actually. The reasons that you gave us for discontinuing the contract were pretty vague. I wondered if you could be more clear about exactly what the problems with the vendor were.
Madam Chair, you know from history many of the difficulties we've had with the vendor, and several of them are outlined in the OLA report. We will continue the 30-day termination period here, and we'll be able to say more about that after that period is closed.
Well, I thought you were negotiating with a new vendor that had taken over the company that you had been involved with.
Madam Chair, we have not been negotiating with any new vendor. The contract was assumed by a parent company last April. ACS took over the contract from Albion and SSI. So they assumed the contract, so they are our new vendor. We were undergoing negotiations with them this past fall for changes to the contract that would have included the package of legislative changes from last year.
So when you say that we have been having difficulty with this vendor for a long time, I don't understand that because we just got a new company to be the vendor.
Madam Chair, the parent company that took over the vendor contract assumed all of the assets and staff of the former company. So the majority of staff who've been working on this as vendors for us remain the same. It was not a whole new set of people and a whole new company that came in to manage or undertake the project.
Well, it was less than a year ago that you were in front of the conference committee telling us that you expected to be proceeding as planned and that you did not anticipate any more delays. So it isn't like we should just know of all the troubles you've been having.
Madam Chair, I think the time we were testifying last year, we, as I expressed in our testimony today, have been trying to work through what difficulties we have. And knowing that there was a parent company taking over the contract gave us optimism last year that would improve many of the things that were problematic for us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
You keep talking about the parent company. Were ACS and SSI or Albion in a subsidiary and parent company relationship prior to ACS coming to Minnesota, or did that develop within ACS coming into Minnesota? I mean,
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, I'm not absolutely certain of the heart of your question, but the transaction that took place last April was that ACS assumed the assets of the Albion SSI organization.
So, I mean, ACS essentially was a new contractor coming in to the state of Minnesota. So, I mean, it really was a new contractor that tried to subsume the staff and the operations of, and in that sense became a parent company.
That's right.
But it wasn't in a parent company relationship prior to.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, that's correct.
Okay, so it is a new contractor.
Yes, they are new. Our relationship with them is new as of April of that year, though new in the sense that they were new players on the ground, old in the sense that there was no one else to have the contract with after that transaction took place. Does that make sense? They inherited the contract.
Right.
Well, members, we have this kind of tracking sheet of the actual spending that's taken place on Health Match. And I guess my question is in regard to, I don't actually recall ever that there was an appropriation for this activity. So maybe you can just explain to us how these resources were generated.
Madam Chair, your memory is correct. The genesis of the Health Match project came through the systems accounts that are managed differently at the department, but you are aware of how those are managed. And so the accounts we use to either update our current legacy systems and keep them current and able to deal with the complexity they must, or initiate projects such as this to take the place of our legacy systems, was the source of the funding.
And What is any of this money that you have spent so far federal funds?
Madam Chair, yes.
And will you have to return any of those federal funds because the project will not be completed?
Madam Chair, our intent is to complete the Health Match project, though this next 30 days will be a time for us to figure out what shape that continuation will take. We've made a lot of progress through the development of an IT system. We've documented our business requirements. We have partial construction. We have a design. And so from that standpoint, our intent, and we've communicated with the federal government, that our intent is to find a way to build on what we have and complete a project. In that path, our expectation would be, and the federal permission would be, to continue to receive federal funds for additional work on the project.
So when you say that you intend to complete the project, what do you mean by that? Are we far enough along so that the staff within the department can complete the project by themselves without a vendor?
Madam Chair, we certainly don't have the complement of staff right now to complete the size of this project, but certainly a staff-driven effort is one of the options that we will be looking at over the next 30 days. I want to be clear that there is not sufficient staff to do that, but the development staff we have had working on Health Match is extremely knowledgeable about the system, and supplementing that is one of the options we will consider.
Will you also be considering a different vendor?
That too will be one of the things that we discuss and look at when we assess our capacity to move forward with the expertise that exists in the department against what gaps we see. We will assess if we need external expertise, including a different vendor to continue the project.
You know, last year when we asked you about this, you told us that there was not another vendor capable of doing the project, in your opinion. That was why this vendor was selected.
Madam Chair, this is a frontier sort of IT project, and while it's very clear that this was a new framework that has not been executed anywhere, we believe that it is a framework worth the project. I mean, it has potential to manage the complexity that we need to manage. But it's clear that no state has demonstrated a fully automated system, and so no vendor can claim sole ownership or even joint ownership of that sort of expertise at this time. There are lots of states like Minnesota that are working to fully automate their system, but no one has figured out how to do that well and smoothly to date.
But you think there are other vendors that are capable of assisting you in finishing the project?
Madam Chair, our 30-day review will give us a better sense of what sort of expertise we need. And knowing that will lead us to understanding what the vendor capacity is and who we might look to help us if we determined that was the route we would take.
Well, I almost shudder to ask the next question. You don't have any idea what the new timeline for finishing the project would be, do you?
Madam Chair, we don't at the moment.
I don't think you really ever did, so I wouldn't expect you would now, especially. But,
Madam Chair, there's no question that Health Match has been a frustration and a difficulty in expectations for everyone involved. The counties are very anxious to get a tool that will help them minimize their workload. We are very anxious to get a tool that will deliver accurate eligibility determinations in a quick time frame, and I know you are very anxious to have a tool of that magnitude that will work well for all of those reasons. So I share the frustration.
Other questions? Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. 7 years and $27 million, what do we have? What are there any deliverables that we have? What do we have to show for this?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, it's been a five-year contract, and the $22 million is what the contract was for. What we've actually paid out to the vendor is $8.3 million. And for that $8.3 million, we have received and worked through documentation of our business requirements, which is extremely substantial in Minnesota. We have 25 major healthcare programs that result in over 100 different types of eligibility. And right now, our current system relies on individual human county workers to sift through all of that complexity and figure it out. I think what we've learned in the five-year history of the project is how difficult it is to write all of those down for a computer to say make yes-no answers to 16,000 different decisions so that it can be done by a computer and not done by people we expect to understand that amount of information.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bronson, the summary that we have before us, the health match summary, the project total is $27 million. So while I appreciate your comment on $8 million, the project total costs mm-hmm. are much higher than $8 million. I was interested in your comment regarding what other states are doing. And appreciative of that, but I would think that we might want to take yet another look at what some of those other states are doing because there must be an example out there that's ahead of the game, and we should maybe take a look at that. I hope that, Madam Chair, that we will invite Ms. Bronson and Mr. Osterberg to come back in 30 days so that we can better understand what the next step is going to be. And I would like some counsel on, just this morning I got a call from one of my counties who said, we understand that you're going to be discussing health match once again in the division this morning. And the county said, Senator Lynch, we're supportive of health match because they're supportive of it because they want that end result. And I can certainly empathize with that. But I've also been very critical of this program in previous presentations for many of the reasons that we are now seeing today and that have been outlined. But what do we tell our counties? What do we tell the end users? It has been years. What do we tell them?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, we will be communicating with the counties as well. And as I said earlier, our recognition of their frustration is palpable. I mean, the situation that they are in is an extremely difficult one. And they are suffering from staff overload as well as complexity overload. And the system, we all need to find an automated solution that can alleviate that for them. We've had counties involved in the development of the business processes and the automation of Health Match. So they are aware and have been involved in the five-year history of it. We will continue to use their expertise to inform what this system should look like and how it should be implemented. This will certainly be seen as a setback by them. So they will share the joint frustration of all of this. I also wanted to make sure that you know that we would be happy to look at any system that you point to in another state that looks like something that we can borrow from or learn from. We have made it a principle of Health Match to understand what other states are doing with automation to make sure that we are on track and doing the very best we can, making the best decisions we can about the technology and how fast it can be implemented. So we welcome those suggestions if there are states you know of that we should talk to.
Other questions, Senator Lori?
Yeah, I mean, as I'm looking at the spreadsheet here, I do notice that we're about three-quarters of the way through state fiscal 08, and there haven't been no payments to SSI, ACS to date. Are there amounts due? Are we going to have to pay them something? And I also notice the Deloitte coming on the scene here. I know they're kind of a competitor in this arena, and what is, are we looking at them as a possible new contractor? Is that what the Deloitte involvement is?
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, it is true that we have not made a payment to the current vendor, ACS, in the last year. The last payment we made to them was in February, and that is how the contract is structured. They've not produced a deliverable since February that would warrant a payment. The question about Deloitte is one that ACS is aware of as well. Deloitte is a contractor on this page because we needed an IVNV, which is an independent validation and verification vendor. This is common on all IT projects of this scale and magnitude. You bring someone in who can validate the processes and the technical pieces of what you're building to give, in this case, us, but also you, confidence that everything is going as it should. They have been on the ground several months, and that is what their purpose is here. So we've been very clear with them that they are to independently verify and validate the business processes and technical components of the Health Match system. It is also the case that ACS views Deloitte as a competitor to their system. One of the difficult things in IT systems is, in order to do an independent verification and validation, you need the expertise of someone who has the understanding and capabilities to do that. So while that is true, it is also necessary from our perspective, the state's perspective, to have someone with the competence to judge a system. So this is not an unusual sort of difficult situation to navigate.
Senator Lori.
Competence is definitely a critical element, but the independence piece is also very critical, which are they barred then from working toward a contract themselves, Deloitte, by being this independent entity viewing the implementation by ACS, or are we going to continue? Because that would, you know, if they're not barred from trying to pursue contracts with the state, their independence would seem to be severely compromised. And then also, I mean, I guess the first question, too, are we going to be in trouble with ACS? Are they going to be coming after us for payments for deliverables that you say were not delivered? Are we in agreement that there is no amount due with ACS, or are we going to fight that one?
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, the termination process over the next 30 days will be the time period in which we sort out any outstanding issues, including financial issues, with ACS. I mean, that, and we will attempt to close that door in 30 days. We will let you know how that proceeds. To the question, though, of whether or not Deloitte is barred as a future vendor, this is something that we will also need to sort out in the next several weeks. To date, Deloitte's purpose on the project has been very clear, and there has been no expectation that they would carry forward any in any other capacity than an IVNV capacity. We will need to sort out what our path needs to be in the next several weeks, and there are certainly procurement rules that would need to be adhered to were we to look for a different vendor, RFP for a different vendor. So we will be sorting those out as well. I fully recognize the difficulties here, and ACS has expressed those as well. But as we've all acknowledged, this is not the sort of work that everybody does, so the community of who is very small.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mrs. Bronson, in a nutshell, is it just the $8 million that you've lost, or was that transferred over to the other company that took over the project? Is there a net loss on this?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I would not characterize the $8 million as a loss because we have deliverables from the vendor for things that they've produced, and we will try to leverage those going forward as much as possible. The loss, I think, to us is a contained path going forward. So the cost of going forward is not known to us, nor is the capacity at this point. With the vendor on board and the $22 million contract, the future of Health Match capacity was jointly the DHS and vendor capacity, and that is what we have lost and need to find a different solution for.
Senator Laurie.
I just need to follow up on this point and with a comment, really. I mean, I guess if there may be no expectation on the part of DHS for Deloitte to have a future role, but I don't think you can say that for Deloitte if you haven't closed that option. And their IVV, independent verification, I just simply can't see how that could not be compromised when they're a private contractor who's looking out to the future and looking for business, which is, you know, what anybody would expect of them. And if we haven't closed that door, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to be the independent review that we really do need. I do understand that we do need that, and I do also understand that there are very few contractors out there, but I just have very serious concerns as to the independence of this review that we're getting and therefore the value of the review we're getting if we haven't closed the door to future contracting options for the entity that is doing that review. So that's just a comment that...
Madam Chair, Senator Laurie, I understand your concern, and this is something that we will need to sort out. The difference about our relationship with Deloitte is 3 days old now, so their independence to date has been a full expectation because there has been no opportunity to consider any kind of future engagement with the state of Minnesota. So I don't have great concerns about that, other than to the extent you need someone in the business to be doing an independent. It's the nature of you could raise the concern of independence in all situations of that sort. But this is how IVNVs are done, and this is who we have on board to do it. The question about how to handle the future relationship with the contractor, we will take seriously. Vendor relationships of all sorts have to adhere to procurement standards and that sort of thing. So we take that seriously in all situations where the state may be doing business with companies in the future. And we need to have an open and competitive process for all comers to that party.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair and Ms. Bronson and Mr. Osberg, it's been stated that there was no specific special appropriation expended for this. So do we have confidence that in the next 30 days as you're evaluating your next move. And in light of our budget constraints, can you give us some confidence that you will not be coming back to us asking for additional appropriation?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, the fiscal outlook is one that I can't claim to know at the moment. We will know more when we are done with the 30 days, and we will let you know what that fiscal outlook looks like. There's no question, though, that IT projects of this magnitude cost resources, and this is a very difficult time administratively for all of us to look at the human services system and make decisions about what there are resources for and what there are not. This, in the department's assessment, is a critical asset to the entire fundamental workings of the human services healthcare system.
Senator Lurie.
All right. I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but if your relationship with Deloitte is 3 days old, $250,000 is pretty expensive days.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, the 3 days I just meant, we've only lived for 3 days of this change in circumstance with Deloitte. Deloitte has been on the ground for several months. And so the nuance that you suggest that our future is now uncertain and what might Deloitte think about that, that is a three-day-old circumstance.
And the relationship that has been with Deloitte for several months has been this IVV relationship?
Yes.
And their advice has helped you understand the need to sever the ACS contract?
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, you're suggesting something in your question that sounds more nefarious than I think I will accede to. The nature of an IVV is to assess independently what the nature and quality of the current system is. We have had preliminary reports from Deloitte in their capacity as an IVV vendor, and they will continue to do that work. Those are things we take seriously. It is the work we've contracted them to do.
All right. I guess I'm done with that line of questioning. I mean,
Is there any information that we can provide to you?
This is all brand new. I mean, I got the letter on Tuesday. I read it, and I went, oh, Lord, again? You know, and this is the first I've seen the spreadsheet. I've had about 5 minutes with it.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, we have provided to OLA staff the initial assessment that Deloitte did, and you can see that through that process, but certainly they did not address this question of competency of ACS at all. There was no indication at all that we did not ask for that, and they did not provide any kind of recommendation or assessment of that.
So the decision to sever the relationship with ACS had more to do with the slow timing and the lack of deliverables?
Madam Chair, yes. We did not see getting to a completed project in a foreseeable time frame, and decided that a different path was necessary to achieve a final product.
Okay. Are there questions? I get to the very troubling and continuing troubling reality that about half the people in Minnesota Care really are eligible for medical assistance. And it's troubling to me on a number of fronts. It's most troubling to me because every day, probably today as we speak, there are people being terminated from Minnesota Care for lack of paying premiums who are really eligible for MA where they should have no premium payment due. It is troubling to me because there are undoubtedly some people who are eligible for medical assistance who are being turned away from Minnesota Care because of the EIS barrier. It is troubling to me because there undoubtedly are people in Minnesota Care who are eligible for medical assistance who are experiencing a hospital cap and therefore are going to be saddled with bad debt in the form of a hospital payment that should have never been there. And then, of course, it is troubling to me because Minnesota Care was never intended to pay for people who are eligible for medical assistance. And so when we don't know how much longer we're going to go on this way, it sort of begs one to begin thinking about other ways to solve this problem for people that are in the Minnesota Care program. And so when you get an idea of what your timeline will be for completing this project, we certainly would want you to let us know that as soon as possible. Other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Lynch, we have a quorum now, and you have a bill with us in our committee today. So,
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 3199 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
It would go to the full Finance Committee, be taken up at their next earliest opportunity. Is there any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. And if you do have other questions about this health match matter, if you want to forward them to us, we will continue the dialogue with the department.